Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Every team in the NBA thinks they've got the best fan base in the league, but they don't. Your fans are not better than Raptor fans. They're just not. Because your fans are not showing up at 7 a.m. for a 9 p.m. tip just to watch the game outside like Raptor fans. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that. And I know that I've never seen a crowd like that in a long time. Maybe ever. I mean, you know what else I haven't seen? A tweet like this from Kendrick Perkins. Perkins said, quote, "The energy in and outside this arena is ridiculous. I've never seen anything like this. Don't know if I'm at the finals, the club, or the inauguration." And he capped it off with a JC blast. He went with a JC blast on Twitter. Somebody responded with, "Come on, Perk. You played in the 2012 finals in OKC. And Perk replied, and I quote, "Yeah, but bro, you have to be here." End quote. You really do have to be there. That joint was rocking. And it had absolutely nothing to do with the guy in the Del Curry jersey on the sideline, the same guy who was covering up the ink that he has of Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on his left arm. That dude is doing everything in his power to make it all about him. But it's not. And the fact that it's not about him is killing him. What it was about last night was Jurassic Park and the fans inside that building. And the Raptors, legends, who were in the house.
Isaiah Thomas, he's the shortest player to ever play in the NBA, and he retired as a Raptor. Muggsy Bogues, a power forward and one of the best rebounders in the NBA, is Charles Oakley. He's a junkyard dog. Welcome back, JYD. Woo! Jerome Williams, playing for the Raptors from 99 to 02 and retiring with Toronto. Please welcome Del Curry, an NBA Hall of Famer and first-round draft pick for the Raptors in 97. T-Mac, Tracy McGrady, drowned by the Raptors in 2000. It's Mo B, Morris Peterson. He's an 11-time All-Star. Please welcome back the one and only Chris Bosh. And he was part of the Raptors story from the beginning. As the first ever draft pick for the team, let's welcome back Damon Stoudemire.
Where's Marcus Camby? And listen, I could go off in a positive manner about any one of those guys. I've got positive things to say about all those guys. Normally, I would start with my guy, Oak. I love Charles Oakley. I love Damon Stoudemire. But you know who I want to talk about for 1 second in that group? My man, Jerome Williams. Like, shout out to all those icons, but especially Jerome Williams in a Jerome Williams jersey, wearing a headband. My dude's awesome. The junkyard dog in the building. Played his last NBA game 14 years ago and still showed up last night like he was getting minutes with the second unit. Dude is 46, and he could still give you 6 good fouls off the bench. What I'm saying is, you don't lose a finals game at home with Jerome Williams wearing a Jerome Williams gamer and a headband. And they didn't. The Raptors took control of that game early on. They never looked back, en route to a 118-109 beatdown. That was no fluke. The better team last night won that game. That's a fact. Toronto played that game at their pace. They got good looks on offense. They made the Warriors work for every single point they got. Nothing was easy for Golden State. You kept waiting for one of those huge runs. Never came. You kept waiting for one of those big momentum swings where the Warriors flipped the game on its head. Never came. When they came out of the locker room, you expected one of those great Warrior third quarters. Didn't happen. Toronto had to have that game. No way they lose game one to Golden State and still expect to win that series. Like, you lose game one, you lose the home court, you're done. Especially against a team as experienced as Golden State. Toronto knew that. They were not going to fall into that trap. And did I or did I not tell you yesterday, this is not Kawhi and company, that they've got some players now. The thinking coming in was, if the Raptors were going to win this series, they were going to need Kawhi Leonard to be the best player on the floor. And then guys around him were going to have to step up. That was not the case last night. Not in part. Kawhi wasn't the best player on the floor last night. Kawhi wasn't even the best player on his own team last night. But the guys around him did step up. They did their jobs. Even though most of those guys have never been in this spot before, they didn't look like it. And the moment was not too big for them. Not at all. From the outset, the Warriors made it pretty clear Kawhi was not going to beat them last night. They were going to make sure that Marc Gasol and Pascal Siakam beat them. And that's what happened. Pascal did. 14 of 17, 32 points, 8 boards, 5 assists. Man, my man was everywhere, doing everything, scoring.
Raptors come down with it. Siakam into the lane, lays it up and in. Biggest lead of the game for Toronto. 26 for Siakam.
You knew he was going to score the ball, and he did. How about his passing? How about this absurd touch pass?
Takes it to the rim. Running the floor, Siakam back to Leonard, and gets the roll.
Does it on both ends, too. Defending. How about this filthy rejection when Draymond got by him?
103-92 Toronto. Green drives near side. Blocked by Siakam.
A masterful performance from Siakam. Just don't come in here and tell me that Toronto beating Golden State last night was some kind of crazy upset and that Siakam came out of nowhere. He's been here for a while. He's the most improved player in the NBA for a reason. And if for some reason you never heard of him before last night, then that's on you, not on him. He is a star in the making. This year might be the last year that he doesn't make an All-Star game. That's how good he is. Not bad for a dude whose career trajectory had him going into the priesthood. I'm not saying that basketball is more important than the clergy, but looking at him getting up and down, I'd be hard-pressed to say that he didn't make the right decision. Look, I'm not saying that I knew this guy would roll out and go 14 of 17 in game one of the NBA Finals against one of the best teams ever. But you can't be shocked that he did. He's that good. He didn't just wake up and turn into this guy last night. And if he can somehow do that three more times, the Raptors are going to win the series. But it wasn't just Siakam. There was Marc Gasol knocking in the three ball.
Long rebound, Siakam. Backs in on Steph Curry. Kick out top. Gasol, three. Good. It's Toronto knocking down triples.
And it wasn't just Gasol. You had FVV dropping this as the shot clock ran down in the fourth.
Shot clock at five. They double. He gets it to Van Vliet. Shot clock at two. Gotta go. Banks it up and in. It took a lap around the track and went down for Fred VanVleet. Down the bottom of the well.
Wait a minute. Did he say two?
Two. Got.
Is that not the clock guy?
Two. Got.
Clock.
Two.
I love it.
Two.
Raptors radio. Anyway, that's when you knew it was going to be their night. When he knocked down that two.
Two.
Again, if for some reason you did not know before, now you do. The most impressive thing about last night, not that they won, but that they made it this far, or I made it this far in this opening blast, without talking about Kawhi. They won game one of the NBA Finals, a game they absolutely had to have, and Kawhi was pretty quiet. I mean, at least for him. Don't get me wrong. 23-8 is good, really good. But it's not what Kawhi had been doing, because Golden State did a pretty good job of taking him out of what he had been doing. The Warriors were determined not to let him beat them. The Warriors wanted to see if Siakam, Gasol, and FVV could beat them. And they did. So, how does Golden State come back in game two? Do they make the bet that Siakam and Gasol and FVV can't do that again? Just playing. Do they bet that those guys who stepped up cannot run that back and do that again? Or do they play Kawhi straight up and play Siakam, Gasol, and the other straight up and then make Kawhi beat them on a potentially messed up leg? If you're Toronto, this is exactly what you want. A 1-0 lead, a jacked up fan base, and Golden State with some questions and maybe not the right answers. Now, the good news for Golden State, they never panic. They've got a coaching staff that's been there before that always seems to dial up the right answers. And after the game, the Warriors talked about how they were not familiar with this team because they really hadn't faced them. Well, bottom line, if Golden State didn't know what they were up against before, they do now. I said it yesterday. While everybody was picking Golden State with or without Kevin Durant, I said Toronto was a threat, a legitimate threat, because they've got the best two-way player in the game, a crazy home court advantage, a fierce defense, and because KD might not go until later in the series, if at all. And now Toronto is three games away from shocking the world. You've probably heard all of these excuses, maybe even used them yourself. I'm not going very far. I'm in a rush. It's too uncomfortable. Sometimes I just forget. Look, don't kid yourself. There is no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. And if you've used any of these excuses or any others, you're putting yourself at risk of injury or even death. In 2017 alone, more than 10,000 people were unbuckled when they were killed in crashes. That's 51% of people killed in motor vehicle crashes that were not wearing seatbelts. No matter what kind of a car you drive, wearing your seatbelt is the best defense in a crash. Even when you sit in the back seat, you still have to buckle up. Same thing when you ride in taxis or you use ride-sharing services too. Cops are on the lookout. They're writing tickets. Why would you take that risk? In 2017 alone, seatbelts saved nearly 15,000 lives. So do the smart thing. Buckle up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. It's paid for by NHTSA. Here's the Pride of Fresno. He's a friend of the program. Chris Haynes is my guest. My man, Chris, what's going on? How are you?
Rome, it's always a pleasure. I'm doing fine, man.
Good, dude, good. Listen, normally I would start with last night's game, but let me start instead with the news that you broke this morning. You reported that the Warriors now expect Kevin Durant to return midway through the finals. What's your sense of midway? Is that game three or game four?
Yeah, my sense is that, you know, I spoke with a couple, you know, members of the organization. They felt like Game 3 could be a possibility, but they felt like it was a stronger possibility that it would be Game 4. And Steve Kerr announced Wednesday, that Kevin Durant was officially cleared to resume on-court basketball work, which that's, you know, the first time that it would, you know, that would have been able to occur with that calf injury, since the calf injury. But, you know, I was told that he actually resumed on-court basketball activities 3 days prior. So he ramped it up before anybody really knew. And he's getting on pace. And a couple of, you know, his teammates feel like he's almost ready. He felt like just sick to his stomach last night watching that game in the finals of game one and not being able to play. And so it's looking like three or four, but most likely game four. But also was told this, I want to say this, that the Warriors do not feel at all that he would not come back at all during his finals run. And I thought that was a lot of speculation, people not knowing if he was ever going to come back. He'll be back. They expect him mid-series.
Chris Haynes joining us. All right, so with that in mind, if he's coming back mid-series, what do you think is a reasonable expectation for him when he does come back? In other words, can he just pick up right where he left off, or is there going to be a transition phase?
There's going to be a transition phase. I mean, remember before he went out with the injury, they kind of altered their offense, and if the ball was going through him, and you know he was putting up crazy numbers. Stephen Curry took a secondary role, and he did that admirably. But I don't think when he comes back, they'll be able to go right back to that. So I think when it's all said and done, I think when he does return, I don't expect a minutes restriction or anything like that. I think they're going to try to get him as conditioned as possible, make sure, you know, he's close to 100% as possible, and they're just going to throw him out there. And I think they'll play it by feel to see how he's looking out there, see if he can get back to his dominant self in a pretty short window.
Chris Haynes is my guest. All right, so Golden State, as you might imagine, they didn't appear panicked when they were talking to the media after the game. How do you think they go about processing what just happened in game one?
You know, I really do believe them. You know, that's the sentiment I got. There wasn't a lot of panic in that locker room. You go in there, you know, there wasn't really any sad faces or angry faces. The only angry face really was DeMarcus Cousins, because he wants more minutes. He wants to play, but that was his first game back, and he understands that. But, you know, they really feel like this is a team that they haven't played, you know, the last couple of years. You know, Draymond Green said, you know, last time they played, he was out, Steph was out. So they you know, they just, it's not a lot of familiarity with this team. It's an Eastern Conference team. They only play them twice. So it was a filling out process. You know, Draymond Green spoke to him to the side. He equated it to boxing. You know, first couple of rounds, you just filling the match out, and then you see where you can strike. So I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to look back at the film today and try to assess where their weaknesses were, where they had some success at. But I think they feel like with the poise they have and the championship pedigree they have, they're not going to allow themselves to get too flustered. But I will say this, Jim, Toronto is for real, man. They are for real. They weren't intimidated by the moment. I picked Golden State in six. I really wanted to pick Golden State in five, but I just felt like, let me just give Toronto a little bit more respect. But, man, this series has the potential to go the distance.
Hey, listen, they're no joke. That's no fluke. I mean, this is not surprising to me at all that they won that game and won it the way they did. Now, I can't sit here, Chris, and say that I knew that Siakam would go 14 for 17, but at the same time, if you know anything about that guy, you can't be really surprised by it either. In fact, what did Golden State make of the game that Siakam just turned in?
Well, that's what Draymond Green, he put it on himself. He said he got to take him out. And, you know, if you're looking at his, you know, his production, I mean, Pascal, he was literally perfect. You know, play the perfect game. You know, he's not going to play those type of games. You know, each and every game. So the Golden State Warriors feel good about the way they defended Kawhi Leonard, and they wanted to make other people, you know, score and produce, and that happened. You saw Marc Gasol hit a couple of threes. He ended up with 20 points. They're going to live with that, and they think Draymond Green he's going to take. That's the matchup I'm going to look for in game two. He said he had to take him out. And Draymond Green considers himself one of the best defenders to ever play. And so I don't think Pascal's going to be as efficient as he was in game one. I don't think maybe people should expect him to. But I think if Golden State sticks to the game plan of trapping Kawhi, getting the ball out of his hands, and trying to make others beat him, I think they feel like that's the best formula for success.
We're talking to Chris Haynes. Listen, before you go, you had the commissioner, Adam Silver, on the latest episode of your podcast. What do you make of the job that Silver has done, and how would you describe his mood on the eve of the finals?
Adam Silver, he's a very innovative commissioner. He's very outspoken. He's not afraid of change, and he's not afraid to change tradition. And we've seen in, you know, his short time in office, we've seen him make some drastic changes, some sweeping changes. But, you know, one thing I want to point out, you know, he talked about how, you know, this series is great for the league and obviously great for the country, you know, of Canada. But, you know, I want to point out, and I tweeted this out, you know, from my account, you know, I asked Adam Silver because there's talks about he is thinking about potentially changing West Coast games, time starts, because LeBron James' move over to the West and how it's affecting ratings. And, you know, a lot of people aren't in favor of that in the West, you know, trying to get to a 6 o'clock game. And I asked him, I said, well, could you think about, since LeBron is the exception, can you think about just changing the Lakers times to 6 o'clock? And he just started laughing and said that, look, he said, I've never thought about that. Just make it a new Lakers time zone. He said, well, you know what? He said, Lakers are getting a lot of pub now. He said, because they got their own channel now, and it's called ESPN. So that's all I see them talking about is the Lakers.
That's good.
So it was just a different vibe and a different feel from what people are accustomed to seeing from Adam Silver. He really let loose and showed his personality, man. So I please encourage everybody to check that out.
And he's such a better dude and better commissioner than the guy who came before him. It's just awesome. Chris Haynes joining us. Let me ask you, you know, more importantly than the return of...
Was that a shot, too?
No, man. What do you mean? What do you mean? Listen, more importantly than the return of Durant, though, midway through the series, is what's coming up on June 4th. That's the night before Game 3. You are hosting a media basketball game in Walnut Creek,
man,
which is a great town. You posted the invite on Twitter. What kind of responses did you get, and who are you expecting to show up for that run?
Oh, man, it was overwhelming. I didn't expect that type of response. We organize these runs at the finals every year, and it's usually for the NBA scribes. And so I felt that was the best way to just get the word out. And we got over 100 inquiries of people wanting to play. And so, I try to fill the first, fill the first spots up with the NBA media. And then I was going to fill the remaining slots up with, other media. There's media from all over covering the finals, just like the Super Bowl. So I had to cap the number at 40 participants, which is going to be the biggest turnout we've had. It's going to be live streamed, an event. So, and I've got texts when I put that tweet out, Jim. I got texts from NBA stars talking about, hey, where's that location? I might stop by, or give me the link when the stream is ready. So it's going to be interesting. I wasn't expecting this type of response, but it's going to be cool for people to see their favorite reporters get out there and ball or not ball.
That's a blast. It's only going to get bigger. He is a senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports, host of the Post It Up with Chris Haynes podcast. Again, the pride of Central Cali. Fresno, good friend of the program. Chris, my man, great job. Always good to have you on. Appreciate you.
Take care, my guy.
While we're doing that, why don't you roll the 4 days that were? Welcome to the jungle. It is a short week and we got a lot to get done, so let's not waste any time with it. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. Nice to be back. Where y'all at?
Where are you?
There are a number of different places for me to start on this Tuesday, but there's only one place where I'm actually going to start. Once again, it's with the LA Lakers. Yeah! Another referred to working with him as, quote, a roller coaster ride of up and down. This just sounds like a horrible guy who was horrible at his job.
Betrayal.
If, in fact, he even showed up for his job. I'm talking about Ryan Hollins.
What is going on, brother?
What do you think when you watch the Lakers and what they're going through right now?
Have you ever thrown up in your mouth, Jim? The mismanagement of LeBron James coming to L.A. as a left. That's how I feel. I throw up in my mouth every time I hear something silly going on.
If you're running through more than a third of your staff every few years, that tells you it's a horrible place to work. Signed, Jim Rome's XR4TI crew. Thanks for that, Tasmati. Thanks for nothing, Chael.
Because I don't even have big nipples.
If I did the math, I'm probably worse than them.
Pegging and going to third and out of your face.
Yo, that throw though, seriously, completely and utterly ridiculous. And trying to run on this guy at this point is just stupid in the, well, stupid way.
Cruz, I don't know if I should be doing one calf raise a week to prepare for this or two. It's got to take just a ton of effort to slam my right foot down on the gas pedal super hard for 3 entire seconds.
My caddy gets a car. My bagman gets a car. My looper gets a car. Derek Dietrich.
Right now, I'm just taking advantage of each and every day that I have a chance to play, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Great conversation. Keep doing you, and really nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jim. Hey, and I saw that you got a cat at home, and it was my cat, Reese.
It's over. Now the pitch to Dietrich, and he swings. And
War Dietrich. War the Reds. War the legendary Rob Butcher. Most of all, war the jungle karma.
The karma's strong this year.
And it never fails.
Jungle karma.
You just seen The Dark Knight.
Hey, hook me up with dinner with Heath Ledger, because he got so locked in.
What are you talking about?
Let's put a smile on that face.
Maybe you put a little respect on him and stop lying out your ass. I'm trying to name drop the guy.
Kevon
Looney joining us. What was it like the first time you met Iggy and he started to give you advice?
First thing he did, he just messed with me a whole lot. I'm like, man, this guy might be an a-hole. He's kind of mean.
Mac Off 25 watch party. It's officially been booked. Downtown Portland at the Bloodworks Live Studio, the 1029 750 The Game Lounge. Lots of parking, room for everyone.
Lorenzo Alexander, the Bill, is joining us. The team added Frank Gore. He's a couple of weeks older than you.
Yeah.
What's he going to bring to the locker room?
That's the first thing I look for when we sign a vet. How old is he? So I was glad to have him here.
Or maybe it's for that pill. You know that pill that people take before they wrestle with someone who's attained the HIV?
Did you just say attained the HIV? You just attained the block.
The HIV block. That I attained.
That just happened on my show. You are the company you keep. And when you bring incognito into your company, that says a hell of a lot about your company. Fontez
Burfecht.
Richie Incognito.
Hi.
Sorry, come on. Come on my property.
Mr. Big Chest.
Mr. Big Chest.
I think I may know how to win the competition based on my resume.
You're like the straw that stirs the drink. Yeah, Rich, you can have a golden ticket.
I got a golden ticket.
Gunnarsson to O'Reilly to Gunnarsson. He scores!
Tony Luffman.
One of the best tweets I saw about last night's game, which really summed it up. Blues are brass as hell. 11:13 p.m. Well said, my man. Well said.
Now, Rich yesterday said that he had something to do with a lot of the smack-off calls.
Maybe I should give Flores credit for introducing my parents to each other so they could procreate and I could pop out. Thanks for everything, Flores.
You're welcome.
Miles, bro, are you really calling from Greece?
Rome, I am literally standing in Santorini. I want to take a minute to just thank Rich Flores for making this volcano around 2,500 years ago and allowing me a wonderful view on my honeymoon.
I want to hear from Tribeca. Athens, do you hear me?
Venice,
damn it, get your ass in here and bring the Amalfi Coast with you.
Torval. Hey, Torval, what's up?
Yeah, we love the Raiders here in Sweden. All of our ancestors raided all of Europe, so we'd be following the Raiders.
Devontae Adams joining us.
The proof is in the pudding. Stack years of doing what I've been doing these past few years. Just be consistent, man, and that's all it's going to take.
Shot clock at 2. Gotta go.
Golden State didn't know what they were up against before. They do now. And now Toronto is 3 games away from shocking the world. Chris Haynes is my guest.
Adam Silver, he really let loose, so I please encourage everybody to check that out.
And he's such a better dude and better commissioner than the guy who came before him. Chris Haynes joining us.
Was that a shot, too?
What do you mean? Damon, Sheehy, Giuseppe.
My dad and my mother always drove me to never quit, never give up on anything. And then when I did door-to-door sales, I got a lot of no's. The next door is going to say yes. The next door is
going to
say yes.
Going to board gym with your clogged intestinal system of
I could get all the best callers to call on the same day. Would that be something you'd be interested in?
You're always going to be a dirty quitter to me, bro.
You're the last guy who should be complaining about anyone being a quitter.
Yo, Tyler, consider that a divorce.
Consider that a divorce.
My 40th birthday, Romy!
Aloha means a hola. 30 dudes in a phone call.
War Greg and Sun Valley.
Gimmicky bitches like us.
Oink, oink, little piggy.
Rit has that cribbage board out again.
We'll be in touch real soon. Keep it weird, man.
Lore enema.
Good night now!
Lore enema. Everybody knows it takes more than just hard work to make it to the pros. It also takes smarts. You know, the kind of smarts that can read a defense, pick it apart. Hiring is no different. You need smarts to find the right people, but you don't need to spend years honing your game. You only need ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invites them to apply for your job. Try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CLONES. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Damon Sheehy Giuseppe is my guest. Damon, great to have you on. How are you?
Yes, I'm doing good. How you doing, Jim?
Good, dude. Good. It is really good to have you on. Listen, we have so much to go through. Let me just start right here. You're going through OTAs right now, and normally, Damon, I would say, what's it like to be at this point of the year, and what's it like to knock off some rust? But given your journey and your road, what's it like for you to be going through OTAs with the Cleveland Browns right now?
It's honestly a blessing. I love it because I'm getting so much experience from OTAs and haven't played football since 2016 and never was able to play receiver at a junior college, so I never had any receiver experience at all. So it's just giving me so much experience being able to go through all the OTAs every day and being able to stay healthy. So I'm just blessed to be able to experience that with these guys out here that are veterans and been through it.
Damon, can we be clear on one thing? Did you just say that you have not played organized football since 2016?
Yeah, I played. That was the last time. 2016 was the last time I played organized football.
And so here you are with the OTAs with the Cleveland Browns. I mean, to fully appreciate all this, we've got to go back to your time at Phoenix College. All right, first off, yeah. How did you get to Phoenix College? Is it true that the plan originally included playing basketball at Mesa Community College?
Yeah, so the plan was me and my brother were going to try to play basketball together at Mesa Community College. And my brother ended up redshirting that year, and I started working out a lot. And I always ran track, so I went to run track that year. And I ended up getting injured, and then I just seen football, and I was kind of like, I think I want to step into football. I'm working out. I'm getting bigger. I was telling my brother, and my brother was just telling me, go for it. You know what I'm saying? You're already fast. You're getting bigger and stronger. And so I tried out for Mesa Community College first, and I ended up didn't make the cut over there for the football team. So I walked on to Phoenix College and just kept going to all the summer workouts and showed up every day. And eventually they just I filled out all the paperwork, and I was able to stay on the roster. And eventually they said I returned kicks after, I think, the second game. And after that, they let me return all the kicks.
All right. So, Damon, just so we're clear on that part of the story, too, because this is also amazing. It feels like the stuff of movies. you went to a workout at Phoenix College. They did not call you back, but you got a schedule of the summer workouts, and you just started showing up. Is that how that went? And if so, what was that like?
It was awesome. I thought I tried out over there, and I thought I did really good. I was tried out as a DB. I started off as a DB, and I had two picks in the tryout. And then I thought I did really well, and then they asked some people to stay after, and I wasn't one of them. So I asked a friend of mine I knew through a mutual friend, was like, who's the head coach? Who can I talk to? I just want to see if I can get into summer workouts. And went to the head coach, and he gave me a schedule for their summer workouts, and I just showed up every day to every workout.
Incredible. So you just keep showing up. I mean, availability is a talent in and of itself, right? The availability mm-hmm. is your best ability. So in your first year on that team, you had nearly 1,200 yards as a kickoff returner. What was that first season like?
The first season, it was awesome. I was just so happy just being able to play football, and I really wanted to be a returner. And all I did was catch. My first year, I didn't get to catch punt returns. All I did was kick return. And my team really believed in me. And it was just a blessing to be able to just go out there and return kicks. And my mom was able to watch, and I was just happy about that.
All right, Damon, in your second season, you were even bigger in return yardage. You had four kickoff return TDs, so you're killing it now. Then you're an All-American as a returner. You're lighting it up. But at the same time, you wanted more. You were trying to show the coaches that you could be a returner and that you wanted to grow as a wide receiver. But for some reason, they were not interested in helping you with that. What was that time like?
It was hard. I would stay after with the quarterbacks and run routes and ask the quarterbacks how I was doing in my route running. And it was just hard because I asked the receiver coach if we could work out on Saturdays and maybe just help me just become a better receiver or just work on being a receiver. And he was just telling me, like, you just need to focus on being a returner. And I was like, I just want to get better at being a receiver, anything I could do. And I guess they just didn't see my will to just want to get better. And he just told me to just focus on one thing.
Damon Sheehy Giuseppe is with the Browns right now in the OTAs. So, Damon, very clearly you were not going to take no for an answer. So that wasn't the answer you were looking for. And then at one point you start to reach out to SEC and Big 12 schools. What kind of a response did you get from them?
I didn't get too much of a response. When I went to talk to every school I could go to or I could drive to at the time after I was done with JUCO, I just asked them to watch my film and give me an opportunity to come out here. I walked on to any D1 school, any D2 school, and no school wanted to watch my film when I went into their office, and it was just hard. It was more the thing, like, I got to talk to a lot of coaches and everything, but I just wanted them to be able to give me the opportunity to check out my film and maybe give me a chance to walk on to a team so I could keep playing ball.
I mean, dude, you're relentless. Have you always been this way? Did you cultivate this mindset? Where does this will and this drive come from?
I would say it came from my mother. My mother always just pushed me to never quit, and my father as well. Like, he would take me places and make me get out of the car and play against kids. He would just take me anywhere over, like, we grew up in Michigan with my dad, and he would take me down to Detroit and make me go out there and play against kids I've never met before and tell them, you got next, and just made sure, like, I go out there and I got to prove myself against people I've never met before. And so that came from my dad, and my mother also always drove me to never quit, never give up on anything. And then when I did door-to-door sales, I got a lot of no's doing door-to-door sales, and that just drove me to keep trying to get those yeses.
Oh, dude, I've lived that life. What were you trying to sell door-to-door?
I was trying to sell ADT security systems. So
right.
I was trying to keep people safe.
Yeah, that was your pitch, too, I guarantee it, right? Hey, wait, don't, just, do you have a minute? I'm trying to keep you safe here, right?
No, the pitch was we was trying to market their home. We was telling them a sales team was going to come in next week, and we just want to use their home as a marketing. So when my sales team comes, we can use you guys as a reference and be able to just help us make your neighbors feel more comfortable.
So, dude, I got to ask you, your energy is so good. Your enthusiasm is so good. Were you good with that? Did you roll with that, or did that job just suck?
That job, it was my friend that told me, and then I rolled with it, and I just went through it, and I loved it. I ended up just loving it, like, just saying it'll be, just keep going, and the next door is going to say yes. The next door is going to say yes. One of the doors today is going to say yes.
My guy, I love that. I knew that'd be your answer. All right, so you're still working out, though. You're training, you're working out. You go to the CFL tryout in Vegas. Then you go to an Arena League tryout. What were those experiences like?
The CFL tryout, that experience was something different. There's 100 guys that showed up, and we all paid $100. And after the tryout, they asked 30 of us to stay after to run more one-on-ones, do more routes. And so after all that, we was there for about 6 hours, I want to say probably 5 hours, just training, working out, just having a tryout. And everything went well. And then afterwards, I went up and talked to the CFL scout. And I was just like, so what's the next step from here? And then he really told me there's no next step. We've only signed one guy ever off a workout, and we ended up cutting him. And I just kind of was confused, like, why did we all just pay $100 to work out here if none of us are going to be able to get a chance? And it was just, I was just confused. I was lost. So I ended up going back to Phoenix, drove back to Phoenix, and I was just kind of like, dang, I didn't know it was going to be like that.
Damon Sheehy Giuseppe joining us, no doubt, but you don't give up. And then you hear through the grapevine that there's an NFL workout in Miami, and then you show up to this thing. You had found out that Alonzo Highsmith, the Browns VP of player personnel, was going to be there. How much did you know about Highsmith prior to that time?
I didn't know too much about Highsmith. I knew a little bit. You know, you hear stories of just a great player throughout time, throughout Miami, when he played at Miami, just here. But I didn't know too much of him personally. And so when I just did my research on him, just make sure I know everything I could know about him. So when I do get there, if any questions come up, I'm gonna have an answer.
So, Damon, how did you pay for the flight to Miami?
My mom, she used all her points she could to get me a flight to get me a flight to Florida. She used all the points she could, and I didn't have any money after I got there. So I ended up getting stuck there because my mom used her money to get me there. And then when I got there, I ended up having $5 and I spent on Checksmith, and I had to wait for the county bus, and I waited there for 3 hours, and someone see me waiting there forever and just ended up loaning me $5 so I could get on the county bus and get all the way to Aventura Mall and then walk to the workout.
Oh, man. So you get to the workout, and the story goes you got stopped by somebody when you got to the workout, but you said that you knew Highsmith, and then you ran over like you guys were boys, like you were old friends. How did you pull that off?
I just pulled that off from when like just being in door-to-door sales is kind of just you gotta rebuttal on the spot and just think of something quick to make something look more comfortable or make someone feel more comfortable. So I just did that as fast as I could. When I seen him walk in, I was like, yeah, I think that's him. That's got to be him. And I just went over, introduced myself, shook his hand, and everything went well.
Damon, so you crush the workout. You run a 4.38. You're catching passes. You're returning kicks. And then about a half hour after that workout, you get a phone call. Who was the phone call from? How did that go?
Alonzo Highsmith, he called me and asked me, he was just asking me kind of questions about myself and then asked me how old I was, just things like football-wise, and asked me when I'm going to be ready to run again. And I told him, whenever you need me to run again, I'm ready to run. And a couple days later, he ended up, the Browns flew me out to Cleveland to run again and work out again, and everything after that was just a blessing.
Dude, the whole thing is just so amazing. Like, what about moms? I mean, when you think of the sacrifices that your mother has made and how hard she's worked for you even to be in this position, what's it like for her to see you doing this right now?
She's just happy. She cried when she found out because I called her when I was going to sign all the paperwork and everything, the contract, and she just cried and was just so happy for me. And I was just so happy to see my mother happy because that's all a son wants, is to see their mother smile and be happy. Like, that's my dream, is just make my mom happy and make sure my mom's taken care of.
Listen, Damon, you understand that you have a lot of work in front of you. I don't need to tell you that. You understand that better than anybody. What's it like to have this opportunity, and what would it be like to make that team?
It would be a blessing. This opportunity is a blessing. I know there's guys everywhere in the country that train hard and just wait for an opportunity like this. So I'm going to try to take full advantage of it and try to be as great as I can. Like, I want to make the team, but I want to try to be just as great as I could possibly be with anything. But first steps first is just every workout, day by day, trying to get better, anything, trying to learn anything new I can, and just 1% better each day.
And then finally, that receiver room is really something. That's a great receiver room. What about the vets? Have they taken a liking or an interest in you?
Yeah, the vets have definitely helped me out. Jarvis has helped me out. Odell's helped me out. Jaden Strong's helped me out. Even the younger receivers, they helped me out. Damian Ratley, Antonio Callaway, Rashad Higgins, they've taught me things and just teach me little things on the side that can help me on my route running. And so the receiver room it's all love. It's everybody just wants to see each other win, and we all just want to try to get each other better.
Damon, I couldn't respect you anymore, and you earned this. You put yourself in that position. They don't just let guys show up. But is there any part of you that looks around that room and you see Jarvis and you see Odell and you're like, damn, is this real? Or you're like, no, man, this is exactly where I belong with these guys.
It's a little bit of both. I'm going to be honest. I just seen these guys on TV. I seen them at LSU. I just seen it all, and it's just like, man, it's crazy. Like, I remember just sitting here thinking, like, I wonder if I could call him and ask him if he could help me, and I just want to see him run routes or be able to practice with him and learn from him. And now that I'm really here, after seeing him on TV all these years, I'm like, that it's just crazy. And I'm like, I worked hard though, so I'm here. I'm meant to be here. I'm gonna try to go as hard as I can.
Damon, there are dudes with really good stories that are not as good at telling the story, and then there are dudes with really good stories that are great at telling the stories, and there are dudes who are really good at telling their stories that are good dudes. That you're in that last category. That was awesome, man. It is so good to have you on the show. Great to meet you. I'm not supposed to root, but you know I'm rooting for you, and I hope we can do it again soon.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you for everything. Thank you for this opportunity.
Lucas Giolito was my guest. Lucas, good to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, how are you doing, Jim?
Good, bud. How about you?
Great. About to head to the field here soon.
Well, I better get you going then. All right, let me ask you first about that win on Tuesday night. The schedule was a little bit different because it was the second game of the day, so that meant your routine was a little bit off, and then you give up a three-runner to Alex Gordon in the first. What was the warm-up process like, and then what was that inning like for you?
Yeah, it was a little bit rushed. As a starting pitcher, I'm used to 7:10 starts, 7:05 day games around 1 p.m. So going into it, I don't remember the last time I pitched the second leg of doubleheader. So I was just kind of hanging out in the clubhouse, watching the game on TV, the first leg, and right around like the ninth inning or so, I was like, okay, I think it would now be a good time to start my pregame routine, but I was already too late. So we had the 6:40 start. The game was scheduled for like 45 minutes right after the first one, and I just wasn't on time. So I basically had to rush through everything, rush through my throwing routine, warm-up routine, and kind of carried that out into the first inning there. Wasn't completely ready to go, but figured it out from there.
Yeah, see, that's my point in bringing that up because, I mean, you're so regimented, and then it kind of throws you off your routine. Then you give up that bomb. It might have been easy at that point, Lucas, to say, you know what, my routine's jacked. It's not my day, but that's not what you did. You were somehow able to hit reset. You retired 22 of the next 24 batters. How did you reset yourself, and how pleased were you with the way you turned that thing around the way you did?
Well, I knew from the first inning that my stuff was good that day. Velocity was up. Everything was moving right. I just kind of had to be like, hey, I screwed up here in the beginning, but three-run lead for the other team. I know how good our offense is. Let me just put up a bunch of zeros and see what can happen here. So that was pretty much the game plan from there. I got James McCann back there just killing it, calling a great game. I don't think I shook once that entire start. So we're just on the same page and found a good rhythm.
Lucas Giolito joining us. I'm glad you mentioned McCann because he said after the game, quote, I don't like throwing around the word ace. You need five quality starting pitchers to be successful. But an ace is a guy that when the situation like tonight, he gave up a three-run homer, he holds the team at bay and allows the offense to come back. Tonight we were able to do that, him helping us get through that momentum by slamming the door and saying enough is enough. That's a sign of an ace. All right, so he used the word ace multiple times in that quote. What's it mean to hear that from a teammate, a guy you respect, describe you as an ace?
It means a lot. It really does. Me and him, our relationship has developed a ton. I mean, ever since he showed up in spring training, I have nothing but great things to say about him as a teammate, player, person. He's one of the leaders on our team, and to hear something like that from him is awesome. I think that I have a lot more work to do before I can truly be considered an ace, have that term next to my name. But, I think that we're kind of taking steps in the right direction, I guess.
You know, you're doing the work, and there's been much of your game that's changed and how your delivery has changed. And then, of course, the look, right? Like how much your hair has changed in that same time. What kind of a role do guys like Jason Worth and James Shields play in that?
Well, it all started when I was a rookie in 16 with the Nats. Rookies, you get a little grief sometimes for certain things. You just got to wear it. Jason Worth gave me a little bit about my hair. I wasn't taking care of it. I wasn't looking professional. But I never really had a good routine. I never really, I got kind of thick, curly hair. I didn't really know what to do with it. And then last year, James Shields took me aside, and one of my veteran mentors from last year's season took me aside and said, "Hey, we're gonna go ahead and get a routine going." Because he's all over. He's been all over it for years. So he showed me everything from the circle brush, the blow drying technique, and all that. And I've just been riding it out ever since.
That's incredible. There's a routine for everything. Lucas Giolito joining us. I mentioned your Southern California background. You played high school ball at Harvard Westlake, and you were part of a team that included future Braves pitcher Max Fried, future Cards pitcher Jack Flaherty, who was on the show last year. The story goes that when you first arrived in high school, you had really good stuff, but the coaches were talking about the fact that you were growing so quickly that it was almost like your release point was changing every time you played. So what were those first few years of high school?
It was tough. You know, most guys, most major league pitchers, if you look at their high school numbers, it's domination from freshman year to senior year. It was not like that for me at all. My freshman year, I struggled throwing strikes. I didn't get much playing time. My sophomore year, I kind of got thrust into the Tuesday guy role, which is like the number one starter, and I wasn't ready for it. I think I just walked a lot of guys, put a lot of guys on base, kind of similar to my year last year in the big leagues, actually. And yeah, I didn't have a ton of success, doubted myself a ton. But then we hired a pitching coach at Harvard Westlake, Ethan Katz, kind of got me into routines, rhythms, you know, figuring out the right drills and everything to get me going. And that's kind of when I started to climb up and figure some things out, started to figure out how to get the ball in the zone and do all the right stuff to be successful. And on my junior and senior years when I start to pitch really well.
Lucas Giolito joining us. So let me go back to Max for one more moment. You helped encourage Max to join you at Harvard Westlake, and then you face him in an inter-squad game. What happened when he stepped in against you?
Yeah, it might not have been the best idea. So yeah, he came over. His high school, like, their high school shut down. So, hey, you should come over. We're going to do something special here at Harvard Westlake. Ended up working out. And then, yeah, I think it was my first time off the mound facing batters my senior year. And Max, if he wasn't a nasty left-handed pitcher, he would have been a first-round draft pick as an outfielder hitter. He was really good. Still is. I mean, he's handling the bat well in the NL right now. But basically, it was an inter-squad game. Max steps in the box. I'm feeling pretty geeked. I'm throwing hard. Like, I'm right around 95. And one gets away from me, rides up and in, and, like, cuts across his nose. So it broke his nose, blood everywhere. I'm, like, freaking out on the mound. It was like a horror movie. And, yeah, it was... I mean, we laugh about it now, but that was pretty interesting situation there. But luckily, he ended up being fine. Just had those raccoon eyes for like a month or two.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing. I'm glad you shared that. That's tough. That's really tough. Lucas Giolito joining us, but now you're good. And listen, you're not just a great baseball player. You were also first chair French horn player back in the day, dude. How in the world did you ever get into the French horn?
Mr. Hunt's band class, sixth grade, Lincoln Middle School, showed up. You know, you got to pick an elective, and I wanted to play an instrument. I was mostly interested in getting into trumpet, maybe doing jazz band or something, but there were already too many trumpets. I was late to the sign-up sheet, as usual. And, yeah, I got the French horn. I didn't even know what it was at the time, but ended up taking it pretty seriously throughout middle school, first couple years of high school, and it was a lot of fun. Taught me some discipline, for sure.
So
it's a hard instrument.
Yeah, right? And did you play Little League out here, or travel, or pony? What did you do?
Little League, Santa Monica Little League, and then got into travel ball when I was like 11, 12 years old, a few different teams.
I know exactly how that goes. Lucas Giolito joining us. One more thought. So what was it like to catch the first pitch from Kanye last year as one great musical artist looking at another? What was it like to meet him?
Yeah, not quite. He's my favorite hip-hop producer, rapper. Been listening to him since I was a kid. It was a really cool moment for me. I don't really get starstruck. I get, you know, with what I get to do, I get to meet a lot of cool people. But that was the one time where, like, my heart was beaten and I didn't know what to do. But, yeah, I mean, I got to catch the first pitch from him and his son, and it was just an awesome moment for me. Chatted with him a little bit, and, yeah, that was that. So I'm looking forward to his next album, that's for sure.
That's cool. That's game respecting game right there. He is having a big year, 7-1, an ERA of 2.85, 69 strikeouts, top 10 in the AL in a number of categories, number 16 pick overall in 2012. Lucas Giolito. Lucas, really good to have you on, man. I appreciate you. That was fun. Thanks for doing that.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Lauren from Naples has been hyping her triumphant return to the jungle. Here she is. Lauren, what's going on? How are you?
What is up, Romy?
Lauren, talk to me.
Yeah. It feels good to be back in the jungle. I'm doing fantastic. I want to wish you a happy Friday.
Are you going to the yacht club this weekend or what?
I'm here right now.
Of course.
I'm frying my ass here, though. I mean, it's hotter than hell. I mean, too bad you can't fry the mojitos and Bloody Marys, though. Am I right?
Yo, you're always right, Lauren. You know that.
I mean, you might say I spent too much time talking about the yacht club and getting frisky, but, I mean, it's better than looking like a hungover frat boy waking up in his own vomit with a bra that looks like something Gary Busey and Rosie O'Donnell concocted. Huh, Brad and Corona? I mean, ew, gross, dude. Anyways, so John and Beeline made a beeline to Cleveland where the economy used to run on LeBron James. But hey, at least they're not Detroit. We're not Detroit. But that reminds me of a good old Pere Lair, always giving it a good old college try for 50 minutes of fake fame. Hey, bro, I have a request. Why don't you sit down, be quiet, take a seat, and take a load off those damn cankles, bruh. Mona, Mona, Mona. Good Lord, child. How old are you? I am just so curious. Trust me, I've been in the emergency room, but really, you're going to bore Jim with your clogged intestinal system of shit. Give him a call when you're home sitting on a donut.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Lauren, Lauren, Lauren. He is D.A. Brother, what's going on, D.A.? How are you?
What up, Romy?
What's
I'm doing
up?
Well. Tough to follow Lauren Artest there, but I'll try. Romy, no need for the player profile because here it is. Let me say this loud enough so even the senior citizen who wandered into the back row of your show and hasn't left yet can hear me. Hey, old man with the loaf of bread feeding imaginary ducks in the studio, turn up your hearing aid. This is my RSVP. I repeat, this is my RSDA. Put a bookmark in that Reader's Digest, write it down for Rome, and have one of your great-grandkids make sure he gets it. Yes, I will be there June the 21st. And Matt in L.A. better hope his neighbor doesn't cancel the cable he's been stealing in the next 4 weeks because this is strictly a spectator event for Matt. Matt, let's make this really clear in case your stupid ass missed it the first time. You're not good. You're filler. Your radio wallpaper. Now, don't confuse getting on the air a lot for being good. There's no room for radio wallpaper in the smack-off. Do you really think Rome's going to look at a call screener for 3 hours with names like mine, Brad and Corona, Leff and Laguna, mine, and then go to you? Hey, it's Smack-Off 25, the most important year ever, or the most important event ever, on the most important radio show ever. I know! Let me go to the worst caller ever! Not happening. You know, Matt would love to have a vine, but that would mean he'd have to have a lawn he doesn't cut. So, you know what, Matt? You better hand Mike and Indy $5,000 right now and hope he doesn't check your counterfeit bills under a light, because the only way you're getting on is as a paying customer on a guaranteed losing phone call. And don't hold your breath waiting for Rome to devote a player profile segment to you, Matt. The best thing you ever did was call LiAngelo Ball Jello Testicle. And it took longer to decode that blast than it took you to say it. That's your entire library of resettable audio. 500 collect phone calls from the detention center with a convict named Tiny guarding the phone booth. And all we got out of them was, Jello Testicle? Great jungle contribution, you hack. Now quit while you're behind. War Matt in L.A. being like Mark in Hollywood's auditions and never calling back. War Paul Pierce picking Matt in L.A. to win the smack-off. War Rick in Buffalo's call, being the only one Garrett Ritt hears all day. Unwar that creep weirdo Rich Flores taking credit for this RSVP, and wore a full set of teeth, rare for clones, I know. See you on June the 21st, my 40th birthday, Romy. I am out!
Wow. From Rwanda to Redondo Beach, you're welcome. Gino, San Antonio. Gino, what's up?
Romy, what a glorious day to be listening to the jungle. Amendolora, bro, I think there are laws against professionals beating down sloppy amateurs. I think your RSVP might just be a felony, so be careful. And yes, while I did appreciate 100% of that take, 100% of this take is me hating on Matt. You're right. But listen, Rome, your interview with Zihi Giuseppe, and honestly, I ain't going to lie, never heard of the guy till you just interviewed him, but anybody with that much can't quit in him has got my respect. But he taught me something about you. He answered a question that I have had about you all these years, 20-plus years calling in the jungle. I have never understood why you take so many bad phone calls, and he answered it for me. It's that door-to-door sales history that you both have in common. You know you got to get through a bunch of no's so you can get to the yeses. So that's why you bang through so many bad calls. You know if you just do it, you're going to get to the good one. He taught me something. Canada, you're so excited. I'm so happy for you guys. You finally got a win in an NBA final. Congratulations. You got a country that is almost as big as Rich Flores' head, and not one Canadian can even make a bench on your entire team. Canada, you are the most unathletic country on the planet. Caleb and Benny think you need to go keto. And speaking of pasty white people, I finally know what that song A Whiter Shade of Pale was talking about. It's your country. I didn't realize the phrase Great White North was in reference to your pigmentation issues. Even Drake, trying to play big man on the sidelines, is pretty much a white guy. I mean, when Matt and Tyler hear that Vic's on hold, what do? Hang up and cross the street? And stop acting like your crowded arena and the streets being filled is such an impressive thing. What else are you Canadians going to be doing? If they weren't making Toronto light up at night from their day glow faces, what'd they be doing? Like cutting holes in the street so they can fish for dinner? Live your best life while you can, Canada, because Kuwait will never be loyal to you. And oh yeah, congratulations, Kuwait. You got some sort of mysterious leg injury, and nobody seems to know what it is, and you're going to be a free agent next year, and you're actually playing despite all that? How fresh. I guess you can't teach a dirty dog a new trick. Where was all this will to compete when you were in San Antonio hiding from Pop and cashing checks because you were in a contract year with a mysterious leg injury? Good for you, Leonard. I guess you decided to earn your check this year. What a hero. You're always going to be a dirty quitter to me, bro. And hey, Rome, can't wait to hear your segment about Matt and Tyler and all their goodness. Maybe you could just play some old clips from Quinn the Car Fixer and see if we can tell the difference. And last take, here's a hot take. Here it is. The Cavalan Asian will be calling in on June 21st. You heard it here first. Later.
All right, then, Gino, rack him. He's a savage, man. Gino has always been a savage. Always been a savage. You know, Gino is further evidence that I don't want to hear about how long I've done this, the show's aged out, this, that, or the other. You're not going to find a better caller to any show than that guy. Not named BIC. And even Gino wouldn't accept that, which I respect about Gino. Gino's been making that call to this show for probably 20 years. That guy's lost nothing. In fact, Gino's more pissed than he's ever been because of, quote, Kuwait. Of course you're pissed. Every Spurs fan is pissed. Mark in Boston. What's going on, Mark? How are you?
Jim, thanks for taking my call, bud.
You got it.
Gino, my God, dude, shut up already. Haven't you ever heard the phrase, brevity is the soul of wit? Even D.A., thinks that call was long in the tooth. Jim, I didn't know that when Teeth Arnold left, you'd replace him with a bigger pair of teeth. Hey, D.A., how are we supposed to prove that it's your 40th birthday on Smackoff Day? Count the rings around your sellish beaver-like chompers? Does D.A. stand for dental atrocity? If you couldn't handle getting dunked on by local Boston hosts, You don't want any of this group, dude. Back to overnight's loser. Tell Pharrell we said hi. Now, Jim, the main reason for my call is I know you have a lot of new viewers, listeners. The Jungle is a brand, so I wanted to take this opportunity as someone who's listened for ages to inform your audience how the Smack-Off came to be. You see, back in 94, when the Jungle was first gaining a widespread audience, Jim had a lot of terrible callers, but a few good ones. And then one day, Rich Flores descended on the studio like an archangel from heaven, essentially the first studio storm, and said, Jim, what if I told you that I'm to believe I could get all the best callers to call on the same day? Would that be something you'd be interested in? And Jim was like, oh, hell yeah, Rich. We should call it the Rich Off. But then Rich asked to change it to the Smack Off because we all know that Rich is like the most humble guy in the Jungle. So war Rich Flores, still not understanding that he's been a punchline for like 3 days. Out.
Rackham, Mark in Boston. Brother, I'll see you on the 21st. He'll be a factor. He always is. Jeff in SoCal. What's going on, Jeff? How are you?
Rome, I'm great. Hey, I know 99% of the clones are out here thinking, Alvy, get to the choppa. But sorry, Steve in H-Town, no schmacky here. Jim, you mentioned that just because you have a golden ticket doesn't mean you'll get on the air come Smack-Off day. And just like trying to get into a club, you need to be really interesting or really famous or really hot. Well, good news, Rome. I'm really interesting. I'm really famous. And I'm really hot. Just ask Danica. This club needs me, Rome. The only club that needs a guy like Jeff in Richmond is Weight Watchers. The only club that needs a guy like Rick in Buffalo is the Hair Club for Men. But, Jim, remember when you had Mark Cuban on the show and he mentioned when pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered? Well, good news, Brad. No slaughtering in your future, my man. I mean, hog. Brad, we have eyes. We can see that pig. That's a baby piglet at best, my man. Oink, oink, little piggy. Rome, I bet the doctor that delivered Brad was stuttering like Bodie trying to rap. Congrats, you're proud parents of a baby, but a baby girl. Man, this determining a gender is hard, Bubba. Brad's lucky Alvy wasn't in the delivery room to hit that doctor with the manual buzzer. And finally, Jim, I know you are a big fan of Flip or Flop, but ever since Tarek ran off with the babysitter and Christina started sleeping with a new contractor, I figured you're not getting your fix. So I reached out to fellow Flipper Dinless, and we did a little project just for you. It's a lot to explain, so I'm just going to blast that out on the Twitter sphere. See you on 621, my man. Out.
All right. See you, Jeff. Man, he was close. He was right there on the line. But close does not count. You did not hear the choppa. And if you haven't heard it yet, I think he survived that somehow. So I'm going to start hour number three by keeping it here in L.A. Matt in Los Angeles. Matt in L.A. Matt, what's going on?
Romulus James, thanks for the vine. So I caught wind that I got to go all L.A. Dodgers on New York Mets, dominant style, on this Big Apple, Big Mouth himself, D.A., or as his team of dentists call him, 401K, because that's what a biannual tooth cleaning of that magnitude fetches, pimp. So from the boogie down Bronx to Brooklyn, Queens, and Hoboken back to Hackensack, for which the round trip mileage might rival if you circumvented Darren's abundant mouth almighty. So you're welcome, DA, because every time that you and I beef, not only do you get a rating spike, you get like 2,000 more Twitter followers, fam. But don't you have a show to prep for, dude? You going wallpaper browsing again? Because we all know you're the expert on wallpaper, a wallpaper aficionado, if you will, on that D-list salary. Lord knows you ain't buying no paint, Scott Service. So, DA, much like the New York Giants of late, you're a non-factor, kid. Your gums can't hack the smack here that I'm cooking up out here in L.A. Gardena, to be exact. You busted up, middle-aged, Kristen Yelich knockoff doppelganger. Stay in your lane, or I'll get Mraz and Andrew Bogish on paperwork payroll and take your show, son. Damian Omen, you don't want none. That's all I got, Jim. Aloha means a hola. Outro.
Rack him. Matt in L.A. good stuff, man. It's such a good beef. DA and Matt in LA. The beef that no. Let's go to Edmonton. Tyler. Hey, Tyler, how are you? What's up?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, dude. Good.
Good, man. I appreciate the profile, but did Matt in LA just hit someone with some salary smack? I don't know, man. Anyway, dude, I got to give props to that creep, Dick Flores. Dude, you really got that catfish mirror shot working, don't you? Like, I don't know if you noticed, Rome, but Flores' mirror selfie was the perfect Tinder catfish job. You're just below his shoulders, showing just a little slight bit of cleavage, and at the perfect angle so you can see all his double chin. And after I've seen that, I'm starting to wonder if this guy isn't left stat for real, man. And shout out to DA for being wishes himself happy birthday on the Jim Rome Show guy. Nice. And look at Gino coming in and still crying about Kawhi. Listen, Gino, I've dealt with guys like you my whole life. You treated your girl like crap, and she walked across the street to my place. And now she's doing all the nice things for me that she never did for you. The sad part is you guys can't take a minute to look yourself in the mirror and figure out the fact that you were the common denominator of all your problems. Kawhi just needed a better team in a better country to get himself right. And I don't want anyone to get this confused. I despise the Toronto Maple Leafs and all their fans. They're a bunch of entitled crybaby bitches like Mike and Indy. But when the Raptors are good or the Blue Jays are good, they become all of Canada's team. And you're damn right we're all going to show up. We'd rather get out and be a part of it because we're not too fat and lazy to get our ass off the couch. Listen, dude, I might allow some Spurs fan to come in and complain about Kawhi, but don't ever forget that you're the guy who had the invite to the Smack Off last year and you didn't show up, only so you could show up on Monday and give everyone your super dorky advanced analytic breakdown of everything that nobody wanted. You are the last guy who should be complaining about anyone being a quitter. Thanks again, Romy. I'm out.
You got it, Tyler. Rack him. A lot of rack calls today. Tyler in Edmonton. Matt, what's going on, man? How are you?
From Redondo Beach to Rwanda, Rome. Whatever the hell that means, man. Romy, I appreciate you pissing off your fellow lard-ass countrymen to support the best of the best, regardless of what their passport says. And hey, man, I'm wondering if we can set up a watch party for this Green Bay watch party. It'd be highly entertaining to watch all these pigs jockeying for the best spot at the trough. And Rome, as statistically the best Canadian caller to your show of all time, my hands are heavy and my back is strong from carrying that dirt person from Edmonton for the last 2 years. But hey, it's time to leave his ass behind like a heavy deuce and soar my sexy lean ass to new heights. Yo, Tyler, consider that a divorce.
All right. So apparently now they're not bros. There's no package deal right there. Matt's going off on his own. Wait, these two bros showed up in New York City together. These two bros show up on the show together. Larry, maybe you're going to rise up and surprise me today. Hey, Lawrence.
Hey, Romy. How you doing, bud?
Good, good. What's up?
Hey, Lauren in Naples, you know, for someone who has a stuffed turtle on her wall and that's your boyfriend, you should keep my name out your mouth. So this one's for you. It's an oldie, like you are, so here you go. Lauren calls Rome from the psycho ward. She wants him to give her everything, flowers, smokers, but most of all, a golden ticket. She gets all frisky at the yacht club race, always drunk, falling on her face. Hawk tries to keep her off the phone. Her smack is weak, just ask the clones. Tell Lauren we don't need her. Tell Lauren we hate her. Tell Lauren not to cry, because Mona says it's time to die. How about that golden ticket, Jimmy?
That's not a good call. No. Does that answer your question, Lawrence?
Like, I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Mona, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great, Mona.
Look, I'm not going to pick on Lauren because I found out that her middle name is Emma. So she has to go through life known as Laurenima. And I saw that BIC's package was so big, I thought it had an elbow. That elbow belonged to Rich Flores.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Mona. You know what? Give her a golden ticket.
I've got a golden ticket.
You know why? Because she is so dangerous. I have no idea what's coming out of her mouth next. Liz in Fall City. Hey, Liz, how are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm great. I want to respond to these two lady clones, Marlboro Mona and Lauren the Lush. Memo Mona, lay off the heaters. And Lauren, lay off the booze. Soon you're going to go straight from the yacht club to the clink club. By the time the smack off even rolls around, you two are not going to be part of any golden ticket list. You're both going to be on the transplant list. One for a new set of lungs and the other for a liver. Class it up, ladies. Be lady clones. Be better. I'm out, Jim.
Racker. Let's go to Los Angeles. Fabian. What's up, Fabian?
Romy, sorry to mess it all up for you, bro. I have to pull over real quick because Adam's like, dude, you ready? I'm like, oh, man. Pulled over. Put the emergency brake on. Vamonos. Look at it. This is the deal. I told them 60 seconds. So, look, I need you to do me a favor, a big-time favor, dude. I need you to get, like, the Dodgers bullpen coach or one of them. And I need some jungle karma for that, for the Dodger bullpen, dude. But the other thing is the thing about the clone stock, the Hennessy's place. Dude, I was thinking, you know what? I'm gonna go all in green, and I'm going to be there. Now, let me tell you something real quick. This is the last of it right here, dude. I don't know none of these cats. I only know the last dude, the polarizing dude, you know, the Flores guy, you know. Anyway, so I know Left in Laguna, it's a gimmicky little bitch, right? And I could tell you this from experience. Rich Flores ain't nothing but a little bitch. You know, that's the difference. You know, it's a gimmicky little bitch. Then we got Rich Flores, the little bitch. And then we have the bitch, right? The bitch. Just for some reason, because, I don't know, trying to offer money. Hey, Mike and Indy, you're a little bitch, dude. All right. See you guys later. See you guys at Hennessy's. I'm going to try not to get drunk. I'm going to try to set myself up. You know, if they don't sell me beer, I'm going to have them hidden all over the damn place, dude. Have a good weekend. Talk to you later, guy.
All right, Fabian, see you, man. Would this gal not be one of the first names to come to mind? Sarah T., Providence. Sarah, what's going on?
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Sarah.
How are you? Do I miss Del Rio?
Whoa.
But anyway, Jim, you know, what a day you had today on the phone. Jesus, love us. What I wanted to talk to you about, because I'm in the America's heartbeat of New England, we have nothing but Robert Kraft news up here day after day, Jim. I know it's old, but we can't get away from it. Did you see him the other night at the Bruins game waving that big yellow finger? Christ, that's how we got in trouble in the first place. You know what, Jim? I'm a little bit ticked off at Bob Kraft. The day of that AFC game, he's off you know where getting you know what. If he's not going to take that game seriously, why the hell should the rest of us? You know what? The morning of that game, I got up early and made a nice lasagna. I had even garlic bread ready. Hell, my husband wanted to wrestle. I said, no, we have people coming over. The game's on. Ugh, I even made tapioca. Oh, and he wasn't even in the same state. He's in Florida. Ugh. And he dropped his girlfriend off at CCD right before he went to that awful spa. But you know what, Jim? On a lighter note, did you hear the good news? I'm honored to tell you the Boston Accents were voted second sexiest in the country. So I thought it'd be a good idea to sex up your show a little bit and redo some of those lame sound bites you have. So let me begin. Alvin, are you ready? Time to die. Oh, here's another one. I love when you talk hockey. Or maybe I could even fly to L.A. and get in a booth with you or something and make it professional. Anyway, finally, I want you all to stop picking on my friend Richie Flores, a.k.a. Dick Flowers. You know what? He's a producer.
Sorry, Sarah. God, Sarah, that was fun. I wish you'd called earlier.
Good night now!